In the second hour today, talking Blueprint Money. And in the first hour, I've got Professor Valerie Schoon. She's a filmmaker, documentarian, professor at Florida State University College of Motion Picture Arts with this new film called Invisible History. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Friend, we are back together again. It is such a pleasure to have you join me on these occasions to bring in conversation those who have something very important to share with us. And certainly that's the case with Commissioner Jeremy Matlow. He'll be with us here in the second hour. And my goodness, this is a time when there's a lot of soul searching going on, I think, I hope. Certainly in my 40 years of living in Tallahassee, coming from the Pacific Northwest, I grew up in Seattle in the 60s and 70s. I then am quite familiar with what it means to rise up in protest. Now, my sister was a member of the SDS. So, she was one of those folks carrying the banners and marching in the parades and protesting the war and other such things. That was her course of action. My father, meanwhile, was a military. He was an officer in the United States Army, served in the Pacific, stationed in Hawaii for a period of time following the attack on Pearl Harbor. She never quite understood his devotion, and he never quite understood her anger. And so here we are in this community. It is reminiscent of those childhood days for me. In as much as we are faced with a lot of heartbreak, the last couple of years has just been understatedly embarrassing, humiliating perhaps. And certainly a deep disappointment when, for the most part, tell me if you disagree, but I think for the most part, most of us go about our business, our daily lives, trusting those in leadership. And in many respects, that's part of the problem, I suppose. Trusting to the point where we become rather disengaged and even disenfranchised. We just don't pay attention. And when stuff does hit the fan, as it has happened, you know, and Commissioner Scott Maddox, he's serving some time, and J.T. Burnett doing the same. Yeah. It does beg the question. Were we asleep at the wheel here? I mean, these guys were carrying on, and are they only the only ones who have done so, or may yet be doing so? And maybe what that has done in some respects is sound this clarion call Come on, people, wake up. What do you really want to have happen? Commissioner Matlow is going to talk with us at length about his perspective on that and how it is that he finds opportunity well beyond the tragedies of this last couple of years and the embarrassment and all of it, but more so looking at our future than given where we are and what has yet to unfold. We're presented with this decision of a 7-5 vote in favor of awarding $20 million to Florida State University to improve Doak Campbell Stadium, which, as others have pointed out, really turns out to be $27 million because that's what it's going to cost us. We're going to have to borrow the $20 million. We haven't gotten it in yet. It's tax dollars, right? The penny tax, sales tax, surcharge, Leon County. That's coming out of your pocket, my friend. You and I have funded all of this, and that $20 million plus interest represents the bulk of the available dollars for the next, 10 years. That's a question we'll have for Commissioner Matlow. You and I should be asking not just how much and why, we should be asking what we imagine Tallahassee to be. How do we want Tallahassee to unfold in the days ahead, in the years ahead? What are our priorities? And do we have people at our disposal, people who have declared their interests are allied with our personal interests, that we can put in office and we can trust them? And maybe that amounts to us being a bit more attentive. Maybe we have to listen a little more carefully to some of those commission meetings. At the very least, make sure that we're going to the source of that information and not simply reading a few headlines or catching an email or two or continuing to believe what we've always believed, whether that is people in public office should be trusted at all times, under any circumstances, don't question authority. Well, talk to my sister about that. She would disagree with you. Or, on the other hand, don't believe anything you hear. You know, become rather, cynical, disconnected. Because, you know, in that way, a sort of cynical apathy that just ends up with more of the same, pushing us back instead of taking us forward, holding us down rather than lifting us up. You know, people who have an idea that would like to start a business. Well, that's a great idea right there. Let's start a business. Well, how are we going to do that if, in fact, the folks that we were relying on for a little help along the way have turned their backs on us? That's not right. You know, that we have in this town one Domey station which serves as a incubator for people who are aspiring entrepreneurs. Well, that thing's been in operation for many years now. And the question is, what has come of it? What great ideas have emerged? I'm sure there have been some. I hope there have been. But why don't we have more of those kinds of facilities, those opportunities for encouragement and inspiration and education, even financing and collaboration and cooperation among like-minded entrepreneurial people? Why don't we have several of those around the city and around the county? What if you're living over there in the 03 or the 04 zip code, or maybe you'd like to find a way to connect with an organization? Maybe it would be a chamber of commerce that doesn't favor the wealthy and the positioned and the powerful, but really does look out for, you know, the little people among us, the ones who are just getting started. And I'm reminded of that proverb that says, "Despise not small beginnings." So it should be said of us all. Even those ideas that you've had on a shelf somewhere in your mind, you know, someday I'd like to do this, or somebody should come up with a solution for that. Well, you might be that person. If you are, I want to tell you, you've got some friends. I'm one of them because I did just that. Helped along the way by a few friends and a few organizations and made it to where I can sit here today and talk with you at length about what it means to live in Tallahassee, to care about people more than I care about my own interests. That's not natural. That has to be learned. But it comes by way of determining that there's no other better way to live your life.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Valerie Schoon is an award-winning producer and filmmaker. In 2021, she produced The Invisible History, Middle Florida's Hidden Roots, which received the Suncoast Regional Emmy Award and was broadcast nationally with American Public Television in 2021. A week ago, Friday night, it was shown at Cascades Park. City of Tallahassee stepped up and said, we're going to provide this free of charge to the public. And so there were a number of folks that turned out on that occasion. Ms. Schoon, for her part, is also the producer of Daring Woman Doctors, Physicians in the 19th Century, which also aired nationally on PBS. Now, prior to this, Ms. Schoon produced the documentary Granada, Colonialism and Conflict, which was broadcast in Granada, and has been invited to screen in New York, LA, Philadelphia, as well as other countries, Africa, and throughout the Caribbean. She is our guest today, and it is a pleasure to welcome Valerie Schoon. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You're looking well. Love the hat.
Thank you.
Very sporty. How did last Friday night go? You had this showing there at Cascades Park. Great weather.
It was great weather, and I thought it went well. I mean, it was nice to see it on a really large screen and outside. That was different too. And I mean, Cascades is like a great park. And in terms of attendance, I thought it was good. I thought, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but there were definitely people in the chairs and people on the grass as well.
Yeah.
And I did not notice people leaving in the middle. So I think that's probably a good sign.
Right. As a producer, this is a good thing, right? When people are not getting up and walking. It happens that this film is really very, and I've had a chance to know, view it several times, but it really stands on its own without any other sort of argument before, after, from on one side or the other. I would encourage people simply to view it for what it is. When you made the film, tell us about why.
Well, I am not from Tallahassee. I moved here about 2003, but now I guess I am from Tallahassee. It's been a long time, or at least I live here, you know.
You're feeling more of the residency.
Yes,
huh?
Yes.
Glad to have you, by the way.
Raising my family here. Yeah, but I'm not really familiar with the history, you know, and so, but I am interested in history. And when I came across one of the enslaved graveyards in Tallahassee, mostly I just thought that maybe there was a singular plantation or two, and I thought maybe I'll research it in the summer. And so I started looking it up and realized when I started researching it that actually I didn't really understand this at the time, but that all of this sort of, they used to call it Middle Florida, but sort of Northern Florida was, the Cotton Belt. And I thought, oh, how did I not know this? I've lived here for a long time. And so it became sort of a journey. So basically I started reading some of the books and chapters that have been written by some of the professors who live in and work in Tallahassee. So Larry Rivers at Florida A&M has written several books on slavery in Northern Florida, and consulted other historians and came to and read the work and came to understand the history. And I thought, wow, I should learn more about this. And because I'm a filmmaker, I decided to put my sort of journey on film, so my journey of discovery.
Your own personal.
I'm not in the film, but, but the idea that I'm asking these historians or other community members about the history that they knew that I didn't know. Mostly, I think I didn't understand that there were 9,000 or so enslaved people who lived and died in, Leon County, when it was coming to be. So that was part of my inspiration too, to sort of make sure that they weren't, forgotten, to sort of like have them be spoken about in this documentary. So that was something I discovered. I think an extension of what I discovered too, it's not necessarily in the documentary, but I came to realize that part of my lack of information extends, of course, earlier than 1830, so the documentary starts in around 1830, and that's when sort of Tallahassee, or 1821, when Tallahassee was sort of established by the entities, by the people.
Francis Epps and such,
But prior to that, there's, hundreds of years of history, thousands of years, of course, before Florida, or, maybe even more.
Right.
But even a couple of hundred years that are really significant, too. And so I realized that in general, my knowledge of Florida history was a bit was shallow.
Right. You'd have to ask the question, okay, so if Tallahassee proper started 1821, again, Francis Epps, the first mayor, what happened 100 years prior to that?
Right. And,
that,
and I think the challenge, even though I think it's really important to look at, the history of the Native Americans, the Seminoles, and all of what happened, the British and the Napoleonic Wars and how it all affected
this region.
I think, but every documentary can only, unless you got a 10-part series or something, you have to pick
HBO wants to call you.
Right. You have to pick
Here's the number.
You have to start somewhere. You know what I mean? And so I decided to
start with
this section. I watched this masterpiece theater series called Poldark. And from watching that series, and then I started listening to the book as Audible, I actually had a sort of view on the Napoleonic Wars that I'm not sure I ever had before. If I learned it in school, it would have been a paragraph. You know what I mean? But when you actually learn about it in this book, which was like stretched over like 30 years, 50 years, whatever, 30, 40 years, I mean, you ended up having the sense of how huge that was. You know what I mean? And how much it actually still influenced the United States and the War of 1812 and these other things that, impacted Florida, Louisiana, and all of them.
You decided at that point, okay, I'm going to, at what point did you decide, I'm going to take this and bring it to film? What was that compelling moment, I suppose? Or was it just a gradual kind of?
I think it's kind of part of being a filmmaker is sort of being alert for sort of stories that one that will engage
you
me,
find curious
me, that yep. I find, that I'm
yep.
curious
yep.
and that I probably shared this idea with a few people to run it up the flagpole, see if it resonated for them.
Anybody,
do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I actually did do that first, one person who I reached out to and see how she felt about it was Teresa Mossenberg, who was my co-producer.
There you go.
On this project, and she's a journalist with WFSU or with the Florida Channel. And so she thought, yes, this is interesting. And so so I think that's kind of how you do it. You basically sort of see if you could get some buy-in with some partners to see if they are also interested, because you can't make a film by yourself.
Yeah.
Or I suppose you could, but it'd
take a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need people to agree to that they see the value of it. And so so she was one of the first people, and then you have to reach out to the people you're going to interview. You know, do they are they going to agree? Do they see the value? You know, so part of it is like creating a team to see, you know, if you can make a team, and then maybe the team can work together to create something. So, I mean, so that's basically, you know, so not all projects that you want to work on or get going necessarily in, you know, are you able to form a team?
Mm. She's a professor at Florida State University College of Motion Picture Arts, a filmmaker, a documentarian. Valerie Schoon is our guest. You stay with me. We've got more.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453. I will try not to sing out of key. We're back. We're talking with Valerie Schoon, this film that has been around now for a little while, but a lot of us are just now beginning to discover Invisible History, thanks in part to the city of Tallahassee that took it upon themselves to show the film publicly a week ago Friday. It is a chronicling of, is that the right word? It is a chronology of, or a story about, slavery in the formation of North and what has been referred to as Middle Florida, particularly Leon County. In my recollection, I think it's the census of 1860 that records 75% of the population. I think you said 9,000 people were enslaved. So one in four. One person owned three others. Is that how that works? On average. So if that's the case, slavery was certainly central to the economy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if, you know, if those, if what you just said, I mean, certainly sometimes some one person owned many and some people owned none.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't think it was like evenly.
Yeah, the math isn't necessarily.
It wasn't evenly distributed, you know, you know, so many people had no slaves.
But at least a quarter of the population.
The point is that the,
free.
There's a percentage of the population that was enslaved. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that capacity, when you, when you came to that point where you had done this sort of, I guess you'd call it personal research and starting to pull together ideas and talking with various people, do you remember a point at which you said, let's do this?
I don't think that movies work that way. You know what I mean? You know, I think that it's really, I mean, the minute you start to reach for the first person to sort of to run up the flagpole, you are doing it. Do you know what I mean? You are doing it. It's just whether you can take it all the way to the finish line, you know what I mean, is sort of the issue. You know, so I think that I think money has a little bit to do with it too. So I mean, I think I was trying, we had to apply for a grant. You know what I mean? So part of it was, can I get a partner who's interested? Yes. Can we fill out a grant? Yes. Can we wait a year to see if we get the money? Yes. You know, and then when you got the money, then you're like, okay, I can do it. Because in the meantime, I had already talked to different people to sort of see if they would allow me to interview them.
And is that a creative process that you replicate? That's how it goes pretty much?
That's pretty much how it goes. Yeah. And that's how it goes in Hollywood too. I mean, you have an idea, but you still have to sort of sell it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why somebody would get up to get the Oscars and say, this took me 20 years to get it. I mean, because part of it
is they have like, a lot of people to thank.
In your mind, it was a go. But right. If somebody, right. You know, unless you're spending your own personal funds, you know, it may not really be a go until you get the funds. So in my mind, it was a go provided I could, you know, get the people to work on it.
Now that you know more about our history, has it changed you in some way when you look at Tallahassee today?
I don't know if it's changed. I mean, I think I feel in a maybe in a funny way like more of Tallahassee. You know, like maybe I felt like a transplant before, but now that I actually understand the history, I feel like I'm less of a visitor. You know, I'm more like I actually do know. And I think that one of the things I noticed is that. Of course, many people know the history that's an invisible history. And when I would talk to somebody who's generationally from here, they understood it perfectly well. You know what I mean? And as you can see from some of the people who I interviewed in the documentary, they are generationally from here.
Indeed.
And so they're aware of this history. It's just that it doesn't necessarily, not something we're going to talk about on a daily basis. So I didn't realize that we had different understandings of Tallahassee. Do you know what I mean?
Indeed.
Until I realized how shallow my own information was. And so now that I know more, you know, I feel like, I understand. I feel maybe a better sense of like, understanding the history, I think helps me feel, have a little bit more of a sense of belonging.
Yeah. Yeah. Professionally, you've received a number of accolades, most notably, the Emmy Award from Suncoast Regional. Among your colleagues, among others, has it generally been well received, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, my colleagues were you know, partners with me on the documentary. I mean, I basically, you know, Mark Vargo, who teaches at the film school, is my cinematographer. We, you know, alums worked on it. You know, so other people in the film school certainly rallied around, and I've had a lot of support from the dean of the film school, from College of Motion Picture Arts, from, you know, so I couldn't have done it without the support of my FSU film school.
I've heard you say that that this film particularly, and maybe it's true of all of your work, doesn't necessarily have a point that you're trying to make outside of simply presenting the facts as you know them, right? It's not trying to drive home some objective that's external.
I was really just trying to share my journey of what I came to understand from talking to these people. And I feel like people can draw their own conclusions from what, you know. But I think a goal of Teresa and mine was to just sort of present something for which people could have conversation around. Do you know what I mean? That it would be such a thing that people could talk about what they saw. Do you know what I mean? And that, So, I mean, I think that I wanted to be reflective of these historians and these other community members and what they perceive about the history. Again, I think that one goal was certainly to say, there were enslaved people here.
Right.
And I want to talk about what that was because I was so ignorant about it. I wanted to make sure that I talked about that. You know, and then there's the question of why are we talking about this? And so, you know, part of that came from, talking to people like Dr. Brickler, you know, filling in the history of his lived experience of Jim Crow. And I think, as you know, Dr. Brickler is an obstetrician who's retired. But I think he told me that he delivered 30,000 babies, 30,000. And, you know, that's a huge...
Astounding.
Right. It's like beyond
astounding.
Like comprehension.
And his son, in his footsteps, is right in there, who has as well contributed to our welfare as a community by bringing this exhibit. Annually, he brings the Red Tail exhibit.
Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So for me, it was just, you know, an opportunity to hear his lived experience.
It happened that he was on the show talking about the Tuskegee Airmen, and he teared up. And he's talking about hoping that he would give younger people an example of what they could do, that they can do more. Maybe there's more for us to learn, as you have learned.
I think that that would be a nice outcome. I mean, for whatever, wherever people live, you know what I mean? I think it's something that, you know, wherever that might be,
right,
you know, looking at the history and even beyond, as I said, of course, this history did not start in 1821, you know, so looking, you know, even earlier into what was going on with Native Americans and Seminoles or where, whatever region you're from, you know, I don't know where it would be, Oregon or what have you.
Right.
But I think that the idea of truly understanding how your community came to be, you know, is a value for people to sort of discuss. Because I think that the however your community came to be, you know, whether you look at it or not, you're not, the influences are still there.
Folks, we're talking with filmmaker Valerie Schoon, and you are in touch with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. And I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
And I'm wondering now if in this time, especially the last 18 years that you've been here, first impressions, you said, well, I'm better aware of and feeling more like I belong here now. Do you see a transition? Is there a contrast, I suppose, between where you were 18 years ago, first arrived in Tallahassee, and where you are now? How do you see us? Do you see us any differently, I suppose?
That's a good question. I don't know if I see, I mean, I don't have that, you know, perspective of Dr. Brickler, who was here in the, you know, Jim Crow era, and, you know, and lived through all of that.
Jack Hadley does.
Well, yes.
We're going to talk about Jack Hadley.
Yes. And I think that, you know, so for me, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like I've been more focused. I don't know if I see Tallahassee as changing a huge amount in the last 18 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But nor have I been really focused on it as such. You know what I mean? And so I think that I may have been more focused on a national level.
Well, and you've been a part of several projects, Oprah Winfrey's work. I'm thinking of the Great Debaters, you know, and all of that you've been involved in various capacities. And it seems to me that maybe when you get back home, so to speak, and you're looking around at Tallahassee, things haven't changed that much, huh?
Well, I think, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think I had an impression that you did of it being like a dusty place at all. Do you know what I mean? Tallahassee, you know, I don't know if I would have been happily living here for 18 years if that was the case. You know, I think I settled into Florida State University, which is a university. You know what I mean? And then there's FAMU, and we go to the games. I'd never been to an HBCU game, football game in my life. I teared up. It was amazing. You know, I went to FSU football game. So I was kind of introduced to things that I'd never experienced. You know what I mean? Growing up in D.C., it just hadn't happened.
Yeah.
And then we have TCC. So I actually find it to be, you know, I found it to be, you know, a stimulating environment to be in, you know what I mean? And I found, like, I made friends with my son's, you know, people at my son's school. So, I mean, I didn't have a sense of it being like some dusty old town, but I think it depends on where you're landing. And I think if you land at a university and if you land at a film school, you know, which is a lot of the people at the film school aren't, you know, are coming, are living here, have chosen to live here and are coming from other places, you know, but
in fact, the film does a great job of helping us better appreciate Tallahassee inside of this very, you know, vast empire of slavery and an economy that rivaled and really outshined anything else, right? So slavery as an institution was worth, in today's dollars, billions and billions of dollars. And so the notion that the South was going to have to surrender all that, give all that up, economically just seemed completely infeasible. So in addition, you have this other film, Daring Women Doctors, Physicians in the 19th Century. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I first learned about a woman named Eliza Greer, who was a medical doctor, an African-American woman, when I was visiting Jack Hadley's African-American Museum in Thomasville.
Yeah.
And I saw on the wall there that a picture of her, and it said that she had had to go to medical school 1 year and then pick cotton 1 year and medical school 1 year. And so, like, it took her 8 years to finish medical school. And so the movie part of me, which is most of me, I suppose, you know, thought, hey, that's a story. You know, that's a movie, you know, all by itself, you know. And so as I started to sort of research or think about it, I thought, but wait, where'd you go to medical school anyway? This is the 1800s. And that's when I came to sort of my research led me to the Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania, which is a medical school that was started for women in 1850. So, you know, long, long before women had the right to vote. And certainly even before the Civil War, you know. And so she had been born enslaved, this Eliza Greer. So I thought, what a journey. But I became interested in the whole school itself, which was basically kind of came out of Quakers, you know, deciding that, yeah, women should be able to be doctors. And, you know, sort of the controversy that surrounded it and its sort of intersection with women's rights and abolitionists. So instead of it just being about Eliza Greer, it became about the women in general.
Indeed.
And so I thought, I found it really, you know, an interesting journey.
I find it compelling because it challenges the notion that people of a given gender or race or class don't have the intellectual capacity. You know, and so it's that notion that, and we see that in the great debaters, right? That, you know, what are we talking about here? A bunch of kids, they don't have that ability. Well, yes, they do. In fact, so for me, that is a liberating and a challenging statement to every person. No matter what I think of where I am in life, you said earlier, if I don't get a whole lot of warm and fuzzy with an idea, that doesn't stop me. I keep going with that idea as long as I believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in and of itself is part of the message here.
Right. You may want to have more than one, though. If you have more than one idea, then if one isn't sparking and you have one over here that is sparking and makes you feel better, you can circle back around to the other one. But I think that I did feel very much inspired by these women, you know, who, you know, people at that point, I think they saw women as almost like children, you know, with no actual legal, no legal rights at all.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? And I thought that who were these intrepid women who thought, yes, I can be a doctor and I can prescribe medicine and I can
one
do all these
ask.
Things when really
yes.
women were considered to be, I mean, certainly there's always women who've had to work, you know, just to,
sure.
just to, you know,
in some capacity.
Yes. Women who don't have money, you know,
anything else.
Or black women
yeah.
and, you know, women who are immigrants or just lower economic scale have had to work hard. But there were but the goal was for some people and for society and for people who could afford it, for women not to work and so to be in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, and that's fine too, you know, that's fine. It's great to be in the home. But I think that you want to have choices. And
well,
so that these
the
women
issue.
Doctors
yeah.
were like, I want the choice.
Do we have choices? You
yeah.
mentioned Jack Hadley. Speaking of intrepid, there's a guy who persevered, served a wonderful career in the Air Force, and then gets back home and begins to take these bits of his collection and pulling them together and decides to form this remarkable museum. And what happens? You show up and are touched by this photograph that then inspires the film. Now I'm, you know, condensing that, but essentially that's sort of the path. So that brings me back to say, when you are possessed with an idea, don't give up on that, right?
That's right.
Because you don't know who you may touch.
Exactly. And, you know, really my goal is to turn that into like a a narrative series, like a limited series on, you know, like 10 parts, whatever. So when I say narrative, like a sort of a little bit fictionalized, you know, series one day. So far, no one's given me the money for that, but I haven't given up.
People, don't give up.
I haven't given up.
Her name is Valerie Schoon. She is an award-winning documentarian, filmmaker with Florida State University College of Motion Picture Arts, and our guest today. Thank you, Ms. Schoon.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Valerie Schoon is our guest, somebody that you really get to know best if you'll watch the work that she's done, especially this film, Invisible History. Find out a way that you can. I think WFSU is a great place to go to be able to see the film in entirety. Thanks again for being with us. Folks, I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. It is a pleasure, as always, to bring to you those who may have personally experienced their own journey in a manner that invites others to learn from them. So it is that with Valerie Schoon, we get to see the outcome for somebody who took a interest in telling stories. But she, in her own words, says, you know, it's about how the story should have ended. So it's not simply the literary or cinematographic skill that she brings. It's a perspective that she brings to that particular endeavor, and certainly not unlike a lot of filmmakers and other creatives. They have a point to make. They have a message to deliver. Some, it seems to me, are less concerned about the larger issues at hand in any creative enterprise, whether that's visual or performing art or film or music, right? It happens, I think, that when you talk with people like Valerie, you learn a whole lot about the creative process that she engages and just how she works. And that, I think, could be then challenging, maybe inspiring, directional for us. It happens, too, that when you have at hand a man like Jeremy Matlow, he's with us here in the second hour. Humble beginnings, that's another statement. This guy grew up in the backseat of his mom's car, who would lay awake at night and hear her car drive up. You know, they were homeless for a period of time, but then when they actually got a place to live, still on food stamps, he is quoted as saying, you know, I knew that if she came up in the driveway late at night, we were going to be able to eat the next day. This is a person who doesn't ask for a whole lot of reparation. He's not looking for anybody to apologize, or certainly not looking to other people to carry the burden for him. But he decided that life could offer a whole lot more than what he'd been given initially. And in that doing, he put together several businesses, most notably now Gain Street Pies. But he came to the business of governance with the city of Tallahassee with that perspective, that we should be looking out for opportunities for one another. And I think that that's where he is driven, that he's trying to see to it, and to the best of his ability, that we collectively have in mind our welfare, our collective fate, our opportunity for the best we can attain for ourselves and for each other. I mean, it's genuine. I've spent enough time around this guy. And I can tell you, I don't agree with all of his ideas. I certainly don't. Because about the things that we care, we're in common. The stuff that we think really matters, we have a very common perspective. At the same time, you and I can look at a certain set of challenges, we'll say, problems, things that we want to fix, and have very different approaches to how we go about doing that. I mean, that's fair, isn't it? We can have a multiple number of answers to a given question, and then it's up to us as the people to find those solutions that we think are the best. And in that way, we look at, well, is this right or is it wrong for the purpose we have in mind? Now, if that is encouraging entrepreneurialism, self-reliance, an opportunity for advancement, even affordable housing, how about loans and grants and such that are made available to aspiring business owners? Yeah. Well, in fact, that has not been our history. No, it hasn't. We have grown up in what amounts to this big, fat plantation, whether it's state government, the university systems. Yeah, I mean, look at the percentage of people that work for those institutions in the main. I think it's somewhere around 60% of the population working for government in some capacity. And I mean, we all know about job advancement there and raises and, yeah, and the ability to introduce new ideas. Yeah, bureaucracies, they're not known for innovation as such. By the way, neither are plantations. Plantations are all about delivering on schedule in a collective way, in a corporate way, doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. As long as they produce a crop at the end of that process, you know, they remain successful. And they remain in power, entrenched, in position. And their job is to simply produce. And in producing, to maintain their position, to protect their own interests, they're going to do what they see fit. So here we have Commissioner Matlow talking with us about the recent decision among commissioners to vote in favor of this dispensation, the disbursement of funds to Florida State University. Controversial, at the very least, an understatement there, an outcry, not like anything I've seen in the 40 years of being in Tallahassee. Real concern about whether or not people have simply been ignored or even noticed. You need to ignore somebody. You have to see that they are actually in the room and then turn away. I wonder whether or not people in those kinds of positions who favor this kind of a decision even see the people. Yeah. Well, it happens, my friend, that we go about trying to make sure that we see you, and certainly I hope that you see us, or at the least hear us. Here's a great thing for you to stay in touch with some of the community activities. You know about COCA? Yeah, COCA is a great organization. It is county and city. COCA, Tallahassee Arts Guide, comes out every week. You should subscribe to it. Great, great opportunity for you. Lots of things going on this weekend. I think Lincoln High School, have their closing night of School of Rock and Performance over there. Check that out. The Leon County Library, tons of opportunities for you at the library through the month here in March. And let's see, what else have they got listed? I'm just picking out a few things that I see on this little newsletter that they put out. Grant Peoples has an International Women's Day coming up March 8th. That'll be this coming week. So there you go. Check it out online. COCA is the Council for Arts in Tallahassee. You stay with me.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Jeremy Matlow is City Commissioner for Seat 3, has been serving the people of Tallahassee since 2018. Not an experienced, long-standing politician. This is a guy who grew up in Tallahassee, went to Oak Ridge Elementary School in Sealy. Grew up in poverty. He is personally acquainted with what it's like to question whether or not you're going to eat today or even next week. He's a guy who decided then, somewhere along his path in his youth, he wanted more. He could do better. And my goodness, he set out on a course that has brought him to a place of not only economic success, financial success, owner of Gain Street Pies, co-owner, along with a couple of other businesses, and I've forgotten now, but we'll get into that. Jeremy Matlow is a friend of this show, has proven himself to be a friend of the people. And I would say that with some qualification. I think he's a friend of the common people, people like me, who just are trying to do our best to get along and not asking for a whole lot of breaks, just asking for a fair playing ground, right? Level playing ground. So let's welcome Jeremy Matlow, our guest today. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Mr. Commissioner, you look well considering the veracity and the demands of your job, several hats that you wear. How's the pizza place doing?
It's doing great.
Or should I just call you the pizza guy? Would that be?
That's going around, yeah. Pizza maker, pizza guy, yeah, all the names.
Well, see, I look at that and go, my God, that's much more impressive than being a commissioner. I mean,
I'd rather not be called a politician, so I'll take pizza maker.
Pizza guy. Well, as long as your pizza is world class, I think that that's okay. And so now you know my bias. If you haven't had Gain Street Pies pizza, well, come on, brother. We got business to talk about, and the business is about as serious, in my mind, as we've experienced as a community in decades. So there's a one penny tax that goes into this blueprint fund. It's our money. And we had this vote recently in which there was a tremendous amount of involvement on a lot of topics. Probably the most noted was the decision to award $27 million, I think, to the folks at Doak Campbell Stadium, Florida State University, wanting to make improvements. Now, in the 40 years I've been here, Commissioner, I don't think I've ever seen a collective a level of disgust and outcry over such a call. What do you think?
I think that's right. I mean, we've heard from, you know, all sections of our community, across the spectrum, conservatives, Democrats, rich, poor, you know, all saying, you know, what the heck do you, what are you guys thinking? Well, how could this move forward? And I, you know, you opened the segment talking about what our community's been through. And when you really start to think about corruption, I always put things in three categories. There's what's illegal, there's what's unethical, and there's just what's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be legal, but it's wrong. And I think this stadium vote certainly falls into what's wrong. And, you know, people get caught up into, you know, who went to jail, who went to prison. But really, when people want an ethical government, it's because they want their government to work for the people.
Yes.
They want it to work for all of us, right?
Yes.
They don't want it to, they don't want pay to play, certainly, directing public resources to, you know, the highest bidder. But when you look at something like the stadium, I think we all kind of felt betrayed.
Yeah.
These are our tax dollars. We were committed to work on infrastructure projects and economic development. And this isn't a small project by any means. You said $27 million. It's actually $20 million, but we're paying $27 million because we haven't collected the tax yet. We are borrowing money to give to Florida State when we all know that they could raise.
I think you said at one point it's like your kids asking for lunch money, but you're going to go over here and take out a loan so that you can install a saltwater pool in your neighbor's yard.
That's exactly it. Right. Or your roof is leaking and you need to desperately repair your own roof and you're borrowing money to do a luxury product in your neighbor's yard. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? Those are the questions.
So then, okay, the nonsensical aspects are clear. My psychology professor in college said, if you can't find a rational explanation, look for an irrational one. So what's the irrational explanation?
The irrational, I mean, it may sound rational, depending on how you look at it, but it's just a power imbalance. You know, people at the top are so used to being able to guide public policy. We've seen that through infrastructure projects as well. But there's a network at the top of our city that gets what they want.
In fact, let me rephrase that. Rather than the notion of being irrational, you said there's illegal, unethical, and then it's just wrong. And that sense of right and wrong is based in, I guess, our perception of the greatest need for the greatest number of people that we can address over the greatest length of time. Here, none of that is being given any kind of credence.
Yeah, not at all, and almost cynically so. People who are in need, who are struggling, are being used as sort of pawns to justify giving this money away. We've heard references to this being the stadium being in 32304,
right.
The poorest zip code in the state of Florida. I mean, how cynical do you have to be to make an argument on the backs of the poor to justify $20 million infrastructure stadium improvements?
I mean, one of our other guests today is Valerie Schoon, and Valerie, as you know quite well, is a documentarian, Florida State professor in the film school over there, has this Invisible History documentary. In fact, it was shown just this last Friday night at Cascades Park to the public free of charge. I can't help but draw the line there between what is our cultural history, in as much as Leon County historically had more plantations than any other in the state, and that somehow Tallahassee never lost the war. We just went on doing business as we have done for the last 150, 200 years, right? With that in mind, here we have a situation where people just act like, well, no, this is a good thing. It's okay that we are oppressing and abusing and denying and ignoring the needs of the vast majority of people.
That's the unfortunate state of affairs. I think when you look at this tax specifically, this was approved by the voters, and it was delivered on a promise that we are going to work towards certain goals.
The 1%, yeah.
Right, and that would be, you know, infrastructure goals, water quality, protecting our environment, and economic development, primarily to create jobs and build wealth in our communities. So I think that is what makes this particular vote so, I guess I'll say painful, especially since the proponents of it never even justified it. Mm. You know, I think the mayor famously said, you're either with Florida State or you're not.
We're talking with Commissioner Jeremy Matlow. You stay with me. We've got more on this topic and a few other ideas.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Commissioner Matlow. He has decided that he's going to pursue re-election. And I think for those of us who are looking at what you have been willing to endure, you've taken a lot of public criticism and what I could consider kind of personal slurs and such, which, you know, nobody had to warn you that that might happen. You went in with eyes wide open, and to my way of thinking thus far, you've handled it in a rather gentlemanly fashion. But I wonder too, when does it come about for you? And I don't know if this is a weekly, monthly, daily, whatever. Do you just say, you know what, I'm done, and if this is how you guys want this to go, fine? Does that creep in your thinking, or are you resolute?
I ran for office for one reason, and that was to make meaningful change in the city of Tallahassee. So a lot of the times we get stuck in the conversations that happen at City Hall, but, you know, the circus down there is completely unresponding and disconnected from our city as a whole. So we see these things play out. We see the crazy things that happen at Chamber of Commerce retreats and kind of this collective establishment really kind of freaking out because they've never really been challenged before, and they really haven't had to answer to the people before. And what we showed them in 2018 and then followed up in 2020, they saw that, hey, the people want to say and how our government's working. Mm. And we're seeing that grow. I think with the stadium vote, had it been 2018 when I first got there, it probably would have been a 2-10 vote.
Yeah.
They had such a stranglehold on our local government. So I'm optimistic, you know, every day. Every day they make terrible decisions like this, they're being exposed to Tallahassee for what they really are.
Are those people we're talking about, are they, I mean, I'm making the assumption here, but is it your view that these are people who just have had it their way for so long, and you say they've never really been challenged? Are they the, I guess, long time, in, you know, sort of the entrenched, the generational wealth? Are they more the young entrepreneurial you know, come to Tallahassee and make millions of dollars, and you'll never pay taxes. You know, it's that kind of. And I think of JT Burnett. You know, this guy is from Monticello originally, right? And didn't inherit wealth by any means. Interestingly, his father was actually in prison when he was a kid. JT, that is. So how do you characterize the people we're talking about?
Sure. I mean, it's the powers that be. It's the bankers that have been here and inherited intergenerational wealth. It's the real estate interest. It's the plantation owners who own 4,000 acres and want to guide public investment to their own property. It's when they get together, they can funnel a bunch of money into campaigns. They can pressure elected officials, but at the end of the day, that's all they can do. If people recognize it for what it is, and we've seen a huge backlash to developers that have kind of steamrolled the process, clear cut, you know, an entire forest. We used to not operate that way. There used to be a little more accountability, but over the last decade, they've really been able to consolidate power amongst, I mean, it's their own little political clique, right? And Mayor Daley is the head of it, working with Vancouver Jones to line up candidates and line up policy outside of the public eye. And I think that's what's so frightening when we look at what's played out in the newspaper and we see them hand-selecting executives to lead public institutions. We see, you know, them over text message, you know, just playing games, trading favors that was never in the public eye. So our big focus is decisions in Florida are supposed to be made in the sunshine in public, and we have to get back to doing that.
Right. Yeah, the sunshine laws become sort of laughable, don't they, when you have that kind of chicanery going on and people, to me, that's just, it's arrogant. You know, it's like, you can't tell me what to do. When you look at the future, here you have the rest of this year running for office, running for re-election here. What does that future look like? What do you hope for?
Well, 2022, I'm up for re-election. We're going to win, but really, what we're looking at is growing responsible, the coalition of responsible elected officials, and that's, again, it's not political party at all. Is it? There's some elected officials who just want to do the right thing deliberately and publicly, and there's others that want to take us backwards and do things the old way. So we have multiple county commission seats open, as well as the mayor and city commission seats. You know, my challenge to everybody in the community, if you want to run for office, put your name on the ballot. And if your name's already on the ballot, you know, tell us what you're about. I was heartened by the courage of a few candidates who actually came to the Blueprint meeting and put their position on record. This was the most consequential decision we've probably made in four years.
Yes.
And out of all the candidates running for public office, only a few were willing to weigh in. And I think that speaks to the type of leaders they may be.
O'Keefe was one of them, right?
Who's that?
Isn't O'Keefe one of those?
David O'Keefe came and spoke. Josh Johnson spoke. There were a few other candidates in attendance as well.
I got the video of O'Keefe and his address to the Joint Commission. And wow, that guy has done his homework. And he has that experience at an administrative level in his academic background. I think he's a CPA. When you think of Tallahassee, you grew up here. You grew up in poverty. What's your dream? What do you imagine Tallahassee can be? Let's give it 5, maybe even 7 years out.
Well, I think from day one, it's taking the most the issues that we need to focus on that our whole community is concerned about and elevating them to the top of the conversation. The fact that we spent 6 months talking about whether we should have cabanas and pleather seats and luxury stadium seating at Doak Campbell Stadium, and we've had very few conversations about affordable housing, and the fact that the market's so crazy, people can't even afford to purchase a home. Renters are having their rent tripled or 30%, 40% increases. Mm-hmm. We've seen entire trailer parks of people living on the edge, really, you know, barely able to afford by having their trailers bought, and those lot rents nearly doubled. That's concerning. And there's not one issue that I think we can solve the whole problems we have in our city when we talk about economic segregation,
right.
And, you know, 100 years of disinvestment in Southside neighborhoods, but we're not even having the right conversations.
Quote from Albert Einstein, he said, you know, intelligence, I hope I'm not misquoting him, but he said, you know, being smart, you can solve problems, but if you're a wise person, you can imagine. And he said, I'm in favor of wisdom. That goes back to, is it right or wrong? And that really just rests in the minds of us all to say, that just doesn't feel right to me, or this feels like the right thing to do for the greatest number of people. That's what we're trying to focus on here, folks. You stay with me. Commissioner Matlow is our guest. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Seller's Advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Seller's Spacious Showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Seller's in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
It has been the case for all of us in this last, let's say, year and a half, 2 years. Shutdowns, businesses have suffered, employees have left. Now we're in this great resignation period where employers are scrambling to try to get people to come back. It has reset the whole equation, I think. I think that what we hear from a lot of prospective employees is, I left that job because I put up with it for 20 years. I'm not going back. I'm not going back into, you know, being underpaid and underappreciated and overworked or even harassed, right? So here we are, Tallahassee, and we have just come through a period in this last few months, maybe the last couple of years, whether we're a business owner or simply working out there, maybe we work for government in some capacity, doesn't matter. We're feeling beat up, man. And now we have this 12%. Tell us about this other funding that's available. Because now we're all just feeling a little edgy, I suppose, right?
Sure. So when we voted for the penny sales tax and extended blueprint, for the first time ever, there was this idea of putting 12% aside for economic development. Since I've been elected, really Commissioner Dozier has been the beating drum of how are we going to responsibly allocate these dollars? When are we going to get down to what this money is going to be spent on? Because unlike infrastructure projects, which we knew what they were, nobody knew where this 12% was going. So we started working on a strategic plan. Mm. And the strategic plan focuses on things like we need to develop our workforce. We need to invest in targeted industries like magnetics and healthcare, and really pinpointing how we grow our economy. And when that strategic plan was in operation, or being developed rather, That's when we saw this great heist, this robbery in the middle of broad daylight. When the stadium investment swooped in and took nearly 25% of the money we're going to collect in 20 years, which is before the plan was even issued, this money starts going out the door. And it was elected officials who were saying, hold on, we need to slow down the process. We need to slow down the process.
Right.
But what we really saw was to me, at the staff level, some of these other things were pushed through. I first learned about it when a reporter asked me if Blueprint was going to be funding Doak Campbell before our staff had even told us about it.
Wow.
Because Mr. Pennegrie, who heads the department, this is the same gentleman who Scott Maddox famously texted, Blueprint is yours, when he got the job, was working behind the scenes to make this happen. So I think at the elected official level, we really wanted to have the conversation responsibly, slow it down, allocate these dollars responsibly. Commissioner Dozier has been a strong advocate for some of those existing, investing in the mag lab, getting magnetics investments, hemp, all these industries we can bring. And from my perspective, I think we should be doing some of those things. But also, in 2014, the whole community didn't get an opportunity to really say how they wanted that 12% spent.
Right.
So I think if we could hit the brakes, I posted on Facebook, how would you spend $20 million?
Right.
People, not surprisingly, still want to see sidewalks in their neighborhoods.
Right.
They still want to see bike lanes. Some want to see parks and youth athletics expanded. We looked at small business loans and grants. We could help 2,000 startups in our community get a foot in the door.
I've always thought we have one Domey station. Why don't we have 10? Why can't we have satellite locations around the county where if you have a business idea, you have some ambition, you're looking for exposure, training, opportunity, even a little inspiration. I mean, you might be the next person to invent, I don't know, a pizza place. I mean, you've come from that sort of take what you have in your hands, work with it, and make something, right? Why can't we encourage that?
There's hundreds of thousands of people in our county. How many of them do you think have a good idea with a little bit of help could make something great happen? We are the testament as a business to somewhat government assistance. I didn't have the credit to go to traditional banks and get a loan to open our business. We did need a $10,000 loan, not a grant like Florida State got. A loan was repaid within 2 years for just $10,000, a seemingly small amount of money. But because of that assistance, we've been able to grow and do millions and millions of dollars per year and employ 100 people. Now magnify that. We're missing so much of our potential because of the same people want to take us backwards and really only care about pushing the status quo. I mean, I think the bottom line of all this entire conversation is it has to come from the very top. We've had this issue really championed by Mayor John Daley, who ran on a platform of leadership you can trust.
Well, who can trust that leadership? That's the question. Because you got some people who seem to trust him immensely, and the rest of us are starting to scratch our heads at the least.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So I think, circling back to what we were saying earlier, it's not about voting for this particular project. It's about voting for elected officials who understand why this is wrong.
Going back to the right and the wrong issues, it's like, hey, man, this is a great town for people who have money, who want to make money. And then we have all these people, these pesky people who just live here, and they run the state bureaus and they work the businesses and they feed the kids and they teach the schools. Okay, but they're not really central to our concern. I mean, that sounds pretty cynical, but after being here 40 years, I mean, I'm kind of there.
Yeah, I think some people see a homeless individual and think, we should really find shelter for that person. And other people think, I wish I didn't have to see that person.
Yeah. All I need is just a couple of folks to say, hey, here's a $10,000 loan. Or here's an idea for a business. Yeah.
And interestingly, if you go with the first method, it solves the problem
right
on the tail end.
Right. Folks, we have Jeremy Matlow here today talking at length with us about a number of topics that if your eyes weren't tearing up already, right, I hope that at this point you are moved to say we can do better and we deserve better as a people, the people who are Tallahassee. Commissioner, thank you, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
That's what I have for you here today, folks. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's radio to the world, streaming all local musicians playing their original music all the time. That is The Sound of Tallahassee on Moose Magnificat. You find them online at moosemagnificat.com. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.